Namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo. How are you this morning? Well, it's morning for me. Today. Hopefully, you're in good health. You're safe. What an amazing, amazing day. Why is it amazing? You're here. I'm here. What could be more amazing? Truly. You know, it's a cliche, really, but certainly throughout Asia, even to this day, filial responsibility, filial paradigm, it's still very much alive today. There's a great deal to say about that. And certainly in Japan, in Nichiren's day, and I'm thinking of, samurai, honor. There's a word that has different meanings depending on different cultural realities. You know, in the West, we used to have very similar beliefs. There used to be, and I say used to be because not so much anymore, we used to have deep, abiding respect for our elders. Our elders, I say that in society, not just grandpa. But anyone with life experience beyond your own, there was just a natural deference to their life experience, that just because they lived that long, they would have experienced more than we have, and they would have something even very simple but profound to say about our life condition. And it's pretty foreign to young minds these days. I mean, our cultures, our television shows, our advertising, they all kind of, the idea of being an elder is kind of a burden or an actual burden these days. It's not respected at all. I would venture to say that in the West, we think of elders as not just a burden. Yeah, just we think Alzheimer's, we think dementia, we think, where do we put this person? Where can we put them where they won't stink up the place because they're crapping themselves all the time? I mean, truly, there's not much deference for old people now. They're just kind of in the way. They're old furniture falling apart. They need to be kicked to the curb. That's the reality. There's very little deference for the elderly in our societies today. But this wasn't always the case. And, I would venture to say that where young people are exposed to some kind of deference for older people is still mostly Asian. In the West, kids who... not always, but in the martial arts, who get into the profound martial arts, not just sport, because sport is, it's a little master-disciple relationship there. But if people get involved in martial arts for the internal development, which isn't common these days, they may get an exposure to that deference to the elders. Anyway, I bring all of that up because it's an important thing to Nichiren. And it certainly was an important thing to Shakyamuni. Not just for parental filial behavior and responsibility, although that's where it starts, as Aristotle would say, not an Asian person at all, Aristotle would say that good government begins with the self, then the household, then the community, then the region, then, right? You can't get to good government unless you establish what good government is, starting with yourself and then your own home, and build from there. So in a way, the West had its own understanding, right, of filial behavior, right? What's another word we would use in our societies? Fiduciary responsibilities, right? And the idea that when you as a young woman or young man leave your home, you're representing your household. That's a foreign thought today. Everybody's me, 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 me. So, I say all of this because we're about to get into a chapter here, The Past Deeds of King Resplendent, and I've subtitled it Filial Responsibility and Perseverance, because it's a big chunk of the lesson in this chapter. And we've already learned, remember, all of this now is about bodhisattva comportments, behavior. How do we behave as bodhisattvas? Because as we move our lives toward our Buddha nature, our Buddha insights, we become influenced to our environment. And so as an influence, as a exemplar, like Nichiren, how we behave, how we compose ourselves is an example to everyone in our environment, whether they know us or not. So that puts a tremendous responsibility on us to be conscious of our own behavior, doesn't it? And so who are we answering to? Why are we feeling this responsibility? And ultimately, the responsibility is to enlightenment, to Buddhaness, to be the best expression of experiencing life that we can be, an excellent human. So here we go. At that time, the Buddha addressed the great assembly, really great assembly, it's huge, of ancient times in a former eon, infinite, boundless, and inconceivable Asamkaya kalpas ago. There was a Buddha named Thunder Voice Constellation King of Wisdom. Whew, there's a mouthful, yeah? Tathagata, well gone, Samyaksambalai, whose domain was named Adorned with Radiance, and whose kalpa was named Joyful Sight. So you see, these are all adjectives of comportment. Under the spiritual rule of that Buddha, there was a king named Resplendent. The wife of that king was called Pure Virtue. Ah, yes, how ideal. Who had two sons, one named Pure Treasury, the other named Pure Eyed. Eyed. Those two sons possessed great supernatural power, fortunateness, and wisdom, and had for long devoted themselves to the ways in which bodhisattvas walk. That is to say, donation paramita, keeping the precepts paramita, perseverance paramita, assiduity paramita, or perseverance in by another name, meditation paramita, wisdom paramita, tactfulness paramita, benevolence, compassion, joy, indifference, and the 37 kinds of aids to the way, all these they thoroughly understood. Now, understand that indifference here doesn't mean they don't pay attention to their environs and they're indifferent to those around them. What it means is they're indifferent to samsara. They're not easily swayed or distracted. There's a note I put in here. Let's see what I said. There is a Japanese saying that children born into families where one or both parents practice the wonderful Lotus Flower Dharma Sutra are called fortune child. No doubt it is chapters or stories like this one that support such traditions. Okay, interesting tidbit. They had also attained the bodhisattva contemplations of the pure contemplation, the sun contemplation, the pure light contemplation, the pure color contemplation, the pure illumination contemplation, the ever resplendent contemplation, the contemplation of the treasury of great dignity, in which contemplations they were thoroughly accomplished. So we've talked about these contemplations before. They're simply awareness, right? Staying aware of one's comportments, that's a big theme throughout Lotus practice of Bodhisattva, yeah? Then that Buddha, desiring to lead King Resplendent and having compassion for the living, taught this Law Flower Dharma Sutra. Okay. Meanwhile, the two sons, pure treasure and pure-eyed, went to their mother, folding together their ten-fingered hands, spoke to her, saying, "Hey, Mom, we beseech you, Mother, to go and visit the Buddha Thunder Voice Constellation King of Wisdom. We also would wait on, approach, serve, and revere him," because he was teaching the Lotus Sutra, right? Now, obviously, Shakyamuni is in the midst of teaching the Lotus Sutra, right? He's finishing up, as it were. So this story of some great past event where this Dharma was being taught, right? It's just an expedient device. It's a setting the scene for behavior around the propagation of this sutra. It didn't happen all these eons ago and so on and so forth. It's just another story about what the proper respect, dignity, attitude, intent should be for us, for Lotus Bodhisattva, right? So keep that in mind, please. And they're asking their mother, and this is an important question because back then, the regular order of things was if you wanted to go, and this for Nichiren happened when he was about 11 or 12 years old. He had a choice to make. He was invited to go and become a monk, a student as it were, and a monastic monk to train at a temple in his area. Or he had to stay with his family and follow in the footsteps of his father. Remember, it's very structured society. Your father's a fisherman, you gonna be a fisherman all your life. That's your caste, right? So he could stay with his family and help with support for the family, bring in money, bring in fish, keep the market going, blah, blah, blah. Or he could leave that life, disconnect from that household, and we've heard this many times, leave the household to pursue a life as a student monk. So when these two sons go to their mother and they say, please, 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 this is in essence what they're saying. They're asking, and this is a big step for the family, not just for the sons, yeah? So let's read on and we'll see how this goes. For what reason? Because that Buddha among the host of universal realms of influence and men is teaching the Law Flower Dharma Sutra, and we ought to hear it. And the mother replied to the sons, "Your father accepts and listens to the heretics and is deeply attached to the Brahman law. Would you go and speak to your father that he may go with us?" Dad, dear old dad, he's stuck in his ways and he's practicing these other philosophies. He's I don't know if he's going to look kindly upon your wanting to get involved in this newfangled thing, this Mahayana. And so we don't only need his permission, but as your mother and knowing the turmoil that you would cause by doing something so different, maybe you could involve your dad in, you know, going and learning this with you so that you could be, there would be some respect, dignity, some parity, right? This is what's driving the filial fabric of the society. So Pure Treasury and Pure Eyed, folding together their 10-fingered hands, said to their mother, "We are sons of the Law King, though born in this home of heretical views." Little rebellion. The mother spoke to her son, saying, "You should have sympathy and compassion for your father and show him some supernatural insight so that seeing it, his mind will become clear and he will perhaps permit us," mothers including herself, "to go to that Buddha." Gotta convince dad, otherwise we leave him as a hulk of, like we do these days, passé, no longer relevant. We owe him an opportunity, right? Thereupon the two sons, with a mind for their father, sprang up into the sky, 7 tala trees high, and displayed many kinds of supernatural deeds, walking, standing, sitting, and lying in the sky. So this is a mentation, right? Demonstrating to their father these supernatural insights. The upper part of their bodies emitting water, the lower emitting fire, or the lower emitting water and the upper emitting fire. This is hyperbole, of course. Or enlarging themselves till they filled the sky, and again appearing small, or small again appearing large, then vanishing from the sky and suddenly appearing on the earth, or into the earth and suddenly appearing, entering the earth as into water, or walking on water as if on earth. Displaying such various supernatural deeds, they led their father, the king, to cleanse his mind, to resolve and discernment. Okay, my sons have shown me some things that has opened my mind to other possibilities. When their father saw his sons possessed of such supernatural powers, he was greatly delighted at so unprecedented an experience, and with joined hands saluted his sons, saying, "Who is your master? Whose pupils are you?" And the two sons replied, "Great king," that's their father, right? "That Buddha, thunder voice constellation, king of wisdom, who is now under the 7-jeweled Bodhi tree, seated on the throne of the law, teaching abroad the Law Flower Dharma Sutra in the midst of the world host of universal realms of influence and men. He is our master. We are his pupils." The father then said to his sons, "I also would like to know your master. Let us go together." Ah, now never mind that the sons have displayed something that they haven't even heard yet. But no matter, maybe they've been studying. We can make all sorts of justifications. The point is, they're demonstrating their zeal, their single-mindedness, to follow this ultimate teaching and go and hear it delivered. And the father is impressed by their zeal and asks to go along. Mother must be happy, yes? On this, the two sons descended from the sky, as one would, went to their mother, and with folded hands said to her, "Our father, the king, has now accepted and understood and been able to set his mind on perfect enlightenment. We have done a Buddha deed for our father. Be pleased, Mother, to permit us to leave home and under that Buddha pursue the way. There it is, leaving the household to become dedicated student monks. Right? Then the two sons, desiring again to announce their wish, said to their mother in verse, "Be pleased, Mother, to release us to leave the household and become Shramanas. Hard is it to meet the Buddhas, and we would be followers of a Buddha. As the blossom of the Adambara, even harder is it to meet a Buddha. And hard it is to escape from hardships. Be pleased to permit us to leave the household." Now, there's a tacit agreement in this, that if you're going to leave the household to become a dedicated monk, the benefits from permitting, enabling, really, these young men and women to enter the life dedicated to a Buddha, to learning the Buddha way, come back to the family in the form of good fortune. But it's not a tacit exchange of a tangible exchange, is it? It must have felt that way. There, on the one hand, you don't want your strongest progeny to leave the farm, as it were, and leave you to struggle with keeping the farm going. But on the other, if their dedication to this path has any merit, you should fearlessly enable them to receive fortune in a different way. Perhaps your fortune will be ease with which to get people to help you on your farm. I don't know. But there's that kind of reciprocal payoff, right? You're not just cutting yourself off from your children. You're sending them to do a very honorable thing, and you should gain from it. That device has been used for many other things throughout history, but this is the formula, as it were, yeah? Then the mother spoke, saying, "I grant you permission to leave the household, and why? Because the Buddha is indeed hard to meet." On this, the two sons said to their parents, "Good father and mother, we beseech that you will now go to the Buddha Thunder Voice Constellation, King of the Wisdom, approach him and pay him homage." Go with us. For what reason? Because a Buddha is as hard to meet as an Adambara flower, or as a one-eyed tortoise meeting the hole in a floating log. Remember that story? I wonder if there's a reference as to... No, it doesn't say. Blind tortoise, infinite. It's chapter 15 of the Samyutta Nikaya. If you want to read the original writing of that tortoise story. Nichiren talks about it, though, and he has quite a comprehensive study of it. So I'll let you locate that. At that juncture, all the 84,000 court ladies of the King Resplendent became capable of receiving and keeping this Lawflower Dharma Sutra. The Bodhisattva Pure-Eyed had for long been thorough in the Lawflower contemplation. The Bodhisattva Pure Treasury had for infinite hundreds of thousands of myriads of kodas of kalpas been thorough in the contemplation of free from deluded and malicious paths, which sought to lead all the living away from all deluded and malicious states of existence. The queen of that king had attained the contemplation of assemblage of Buddhas and was able to know the secret resources of Buddhas. Thus did the two sons with tact wisely convert their father, bringing his mind to accept, discern, and delight in the Buddha law. Thereupon, King Resplendent, accompanied by his ministers and retinue, Queen Pure Virtue, accompanied by her fine court ladies and retinue, and the two sons of that king, accompanied by 42,000 people, at once set out together to visit the Buddha. Wow. This is quite a horde. Arriving and prostrating themselves at his feet, they made procession around the Buddha three times and then withdrew to one side. Then that Buddha taught to the king, showing, teaching, profiting, and rejoicing him, so that the king was greatly delighted. Then King Resplendent and his queen unloosed the necklaces of jewels worth hundreds of and thousands from their necks and threw them upon the Buddha, which in the sky were transformed into four columned jewel towers. On the tower was a four-columned jewel tower, singular. On the tower was a large jeweled couch spread with hundreds of thousands of myriads of celestial coverings, on which was the Buddha sitting cross-legged, emitting a great ray of light, whereupon King Resplendent reflected thus: rare, dignified, extraordinary is the Buddha's body, perfect in its supreme, refined coloring. Then the Buddha, Thunder Voice, Constellation King of Wisdom, addressed the four groups, saying, "You see this King Resplendent standing before me with folded hands? This king, having become a bhikshu within my rule and being zealous in observing the laws which aid the Buddha way, shall become a Buddha entitled Shalendra, Tree King, whose domain will be named Great Luster and his Kalpa named Great High King. This Buddha, Shalendra, Tree King, will have countless bodhisattvas and countless sravakas, and his domain will be level and straight. Such will be his merits." We hear this kind of thing over and over again, right? The king at once made over his domain to his younger brother. The king, together with his queen, two sons, and retinue, forsook his household and followed the way under the rule of that Buddha. Having forsaken his household for 84,000 years, the king was ever diligent and zealous in observing the wonderful law flower Dharma Sutra, and after these years passed, attained the contemplation of adorned with all pure merits. So not only did the two boys get to go into the monastic rule, but the King Resplendent gave his entire kingdom to his brother, his younger brother. And he and his entire family, wife, kids, all, then went on to become bodhisattva way, become teachers of the law flower Dharma, right? Whereupon he arose in the sky to a height of 7 tala trees and said to that Buddha, "World-honored one, these my two sons have already done a Buddha deed by their supernatural transformations, changing my heretical mind, establishing me in the Buddha law, and causing me to see the world-honored one. These two sons are my good friends, for out of a desire to develop the roots of goodness planted in my former lives and to benefit me, they came and were born in my household." So the fortune that his sons opened him up to are a function of Tathagata, the engine of life, bringing them into his life to do explicitly this. So this is where I say the purpose of life is to be bodhisattvas, to experience the entirety of life contemporaneously, right? Moment to moment to moment to moment. Experience the momentum of all life. And so that's essentially what he's saying. He's saying, "I'm here before you and have accomplished all these things and this great fortune because of my sons, and I've gotten these sons by virtue of my virtuous acts from prior to my sons. whatever was keeping me that last hurdle to come into the Buddha way, my sons were born in order to facilitate that happening. Truly great Buddha deeds, bodhisattvas, yeah. Thereupon the Buddha, Thunder Voice, Constellation King of Wisdom, addressed King Resplendent, saying, "So it is. So it is. It is as you say. Any good son or good daughter, by planting roots of goodness, will in every generation obtain good friends, which good friends will be able to do Buddha deeds, showing, teaching, profiting, and rejoicing him, and causing him to enter into perfect enlightenment." No, K-N-O-W, no, great king. A good friend is the great cause whereby men are converted and led to see the Buddha and aroused to perfect enlightenment. We all need a kick in the butt, don't we? And this is why I say all of us, because we're practicing together, we're learning together, we're sharing and asking questions and overcoming doubts and deepening our confidence in our practice. We are all good friends. This is the purpose of a sangha. This is the only purpose of a sangha. Great king, do you see these two sons? These two sons have already paid homage to Buddhas 65 times, the hundreds of thousands of myriads of kotas of nayutas of the sands of the Ganges, waiting upon and revering them. And among those Buddhas received and kept the Law Flower Dharma Sutra, having compassion for the living with their false views and establishing them in right views. So that might sound confusing, but remember the semblance dharma? Those were false views. And establishing them in their in right views is their conversion, right? By their deeds and by their studies of the Law Flower Dharma Sutra. King Resplendent thereupon descended from the sky and said to the Buddha, "World-honored one, rare indeed is the sight of this, the Tathagata. By his merits and wisdom, the protuberance on his head shines brilliantly." This Buddha is a manifestation of Tathagata, yes? His eyes are wide, open, and deep blue. The tuft between his eyebrows is white as the jewelly moon. His teeth are white, even, close, and ever shining. His lips are red and beautiful as bimba fruit. Then the king Resplendent had extolled that Buddha's so many merits, countless hundreds of thousands of myriads of kodas of them. With all his mind, he folded his hands before the Tathagata Buddha and again addressed that Buddha, saying, "Unprecedented is the world, honored one. The Tathagata's teaching is perfect in its inconceivable and wondrous merit. The moral precepts which he promulgates are comforting and quickening. From this day onward, I will not again follow my own mind, nor beget false views, nor a haughty, angry, or any other distorted or deluded mind." Having uttered these words, he did reverence to the Buddha and went forth. Shakyamuni Buddha then said to the great assembly, "What is your opinion, this King Resplendent? Could he be any other person? He is indeed the present Bodhisattva flower of virtue." That queen, pure virtue, is the Bodhisattva shining splendor, now in the presence of the Buddha, who, out of compassion for King Resplendent and his people, was born amongst them. How is that word not in the dictionary? These two sons are the present Medicine King Bodhisattva and Medicine Lord Bodhisattva. Those Bodhisattvas, Medicine King and Medicine Lord, Having perfected such great merits, under countless hundred thousands myriads of Kodas and Buddhas, planted virtuous roots and perfectly attained qualities of goodness beyond comparison or conception. If there be anyone who is acquainted with the names of these two bodhisattvas, universal realms of influence and men in all the world will pay him homage. While the Buddha taught this chapter, the story of King Resplendent, the 84,000 people departed from impurity and separated themselves from uncleanliness and acquired pure spiritual eyes in regard to spiritual things. And so I close this chapter with an annotation. One of the more convoluted devices that Shakyamuni uses as a teaching device is the personifications of skill sets and characteristics of influencers or teachers of the Dharma. It has been useful in several chapters before this one, and perhaps it has shown itself to you by now. There is this last conversion of the protagonists of the story being revealed as a previously established personae. As in this story of the King Resplendent, we find out that he is in fact Bodhisattva Flower Virtue, and that his two sons, previously named Pure Treasury and Pure Eyed, are now revealed to be Bodhisattva Medicine King and Medicine Lord Bodhisattva. Blah, blah, blah. What we can take from this is that the entire story was to demonstrate the varied paths of those aspiring to the Buddha way all lead ultimately to essential attitudes and intents demonstrated in behavioral archetypes, ultimately leading to Buddha-ness. So the story really revolves around, as I stated in the subtitle, right? I'm going back to it now so I don't misquote myself. Filial responsibility and perseverance. So the concept of filial responsibility in this story is not only personal and familial, but it's expanded to a filial responsibility to the great Dharma law, to Myoho Renge Kyo. Our behavior, our comportment as we course as bodhisattva is to represent the dignity and respect of invoking our Buddha-ness. Why wouldn't we be filial to that, responsible to that? Makes complete sense. So this story is maybe a little bit deeper about how we should sense our connection to Buddhahood. Again, it's innate. We need to exercise it to make it control or be more aware consistently from moment to moment. That's our mission. But what drives our mission, what drives our purpose in life, is enlightenment. And so our behavior in society, amongst others, should first check itself against that measure, not samsaric attachments, right? Okay, I think you get it. Next up, the final chapter of the Lotus Sutra, 28, Encouragement of the Bodhisattva Universal Worthy, the final guidance for comportment and propagation. So I look forward to getting into that one. That's our completion of our graduate program, if you will. And then we have the closing sutra, if you will, the epilogue, yet after that. But first, we'll do chapter 28. That'll complete the Lotus teaching proper, and then we'll close with the epilogue. Thank you. Thank you for your practice. Thank you for following along. I deeply appreciate your practice, really, and your support means everything to keep this whole resource going, not just these videos, the free podcasts, the website, the bookstore, mandala store, all of that. Patrons, all of you supporting this sangha, thank you. Namo myoho renge kyo, and I will see you in the next one. Be there. Bye for now.